Friday, the House State Affairs Committee will come to order at about 10 minutes after 11 on whatever date this is. And with us this morning, we have Representative Dahl, Representative Coghill, Representative Johnson, Representative Johansson, Representative and Vice Chair Bob Rose, and myself, Bob in District 31. And today, we are going to be considering SB 202, which prohibits state funding for Real ID Act, and SB 201, public finance website. And then, if we get through here in time, I'm going to ask Representative Johansson to give us a quick report on the, and final report on the subcommittee on conflicts of interest. And I would like to point out that there is a, I guess, memorial celebration for Tom Stewart this afternoon, and I think some of the committee members would like to go to that. So that's another reason to try to move this legislation along, and if possible, and I certainly would, I'd like to move both these bills from committee today. So with that, Senator Wilkowski, would you join us, please? Morning, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You introduce yourself and tell us the good, bad, and ugly about this bill.
Thank you. There is no bad or ugly, only good. But for the record, my name is Bill Wilkowski. I'm State Senator for Northeast Anchorage, and I appreciate the opportunity.
A little louder, please.
I appreciate the opportunity to come in and present this bill. And I'll keep it very short. I know it's this sunny Saturday. I appreciate the members coming in for the extra work today. Essentially, what this bill does, SB 202, it would prohibit the state from spending money on, to implement Real ID. And the bill passed out of the Senate. We worked with the chair. Mr. Lynn, you've been very gracious. I appreciate how you've worked with this bill and scheduling it so quickly. I know there were some concerns about whether or not this impacts the good business practices of the Department of Motor Vehicles and whether or not it will impact some other bills that are in the building. And I'll just categorically say to the extent that the bill is pretty straightforward, and I'm going to.
Yeah, if I may interrupt you, before we go any further, I'd ask somebody to make a motion to adopt the CS version M, please. Reverend Rogers?
I would like to move for the committee house CS for Senate Bill 202 version M as our work draft.
Okay, without objection. Go ahead, Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the extent that other bills, so-called legal presence bills, are not implemented solely for the purpose of meeting the requirements of Real ID, then this bill has absolutely no impact on those. This bill likewise has no impact on the ability of Department of Motor Vehicles to implement any sort of good business practices. And I know there was an example that was asked, are we going to have to go back to laminated ID cards, or are the digital ones still permitted? Absolutely, the digital ones are still permitted. This doesn't impact that in any way. The essence of this bill is the concern that many people have is the sharing of data with other states and the security risks that that exposes Alaskan citizens to. That's the essence of what this goes to. And really, state sovereignty, having the federal government dictate to us what our driver's licenses and identification cards should look like. That's what the essence of SB 202 goes to. Okay. And I'll stop right there, Mr. Chair. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Let's go down the line. Reverend Dahl first and Reverend Coghill.
Okay, thank you. I understand that we have extended, Alaska has extended, and that would be until December of 09. If we comply, when do we have to start issuing the license cards? I know that otherwise we would become doing it by, would it be by May of this year, or could you speak to that?
It's I mean, the current status of the federal law is as you know, the federal law is under siege right now. There's 36 states that have either said no to Real ID or are considering legislation to say no to Real ID. Montana flat out said they're not complying with Real ID, and they were granted an extension by the Secretary of Department of Homeland Security. So there's every anticipation that because the states have rebelled against this, the federal government is going to back off and not require states to do this. But if they don't, then the requirement is that states have to start issuing real IDs in December of 2009.
December.
Or have to start complying at that time, yes.
Okay, Reverend Cargill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I had a resolution stating pretty much the same thing, and I struggled with the language on the straight-up prohibition of using any money, because I think what would have created a lot much larger bill is if we had started then lining out what those requirements were. And that was going to be kind of my problem. At this point, I think it loosens us enough where we can make a judgment call on what those requirements are. And so I just want to, on the record, that's what the expectation is here.
Absolutely. We had a lot of discussion about this on the Senate side, because we didn't want to do anything to impede the good business practices of DMV, the ability of them to implement technological advances that will make our licenses more secure, protect the integrity of the licenses, protect people from forging them. That's not our intent at all to do that. And so I will say that on the record. And we just struggled with kind of precisely what you're saying, which is, well, once you start listing things that you can and can't comply with, I think that goes down a dangerous rabbit hole. So I think this is a very fair compromise that the chair has worked out.
Great. Any other comment? I have online.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Representative Johansson.
Thank you. We adopted a CS. Is that coming from your office or from the chair, or do you support the new language?
It came primarily from my office in consultation with the senator.
Right. The chair came to our office and asked, stated the concerns that I think Representative Cockhill addressed, which is we don't want to hamstring the Department of Military Veterans, the Department of Motor Vehicles. We've been working with DMV on some language. This issue actually came up on the Senate side, and we talked about it, and then we contacted the states of Maine, Montana, and Washington, who have similar pieces of legislation as ours, saying no funds at all. And they didn't list out specific items. And they said it's had absolutely no impact on their ability to have good business practices. Our language actually, I think, goes a little bit further than what some of those states do in giving us some wiggle room and making sure that we're not preventing the good business practices of the DMV.
Very good. Representative Drahan, can you continue?
Yeah, I just don't know very much about the federal act, and I assume you do since you have legislation regarding it. Is there what's the federal hammer? I mean, if 09 comes and it's not changed back east, is there a funding hammer like most of these things have?
Well, there's not a real funding hammer, and that's one of the big problems with the bill, is that this is Real ID is going to cost the state tens of billions of dollars, and the federal government is providing, I think, about $80 million in total funds for the states. So there's no real funding hammer. That, in fact, is, I think, one of the biggest problems that's led the National Conference of State Legislatures and the National Governors Association to oppose Real ID as constructed, because there was no funding from the federal government to implement it. It'll cost tens of millions of dollars to implement it in Alaska, which is a real concern. The real hammer for the federal government is the requirements under Real ID are that anytime you enter a federal building, you have to show your Real ID card. Anytime you go on an airplane, you have to show your Real ID card. And so the federal government could say you're going to have to be subjected to secondary security in order to enter those buildings or get on a plane.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Reverend Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. From what I see, version M basically means that we don't, that anything is, it basically guts the intention of the bill as far as I can see. Because then you say solely for the purpose, you could say, well, this is to implement Real ID and prevent studded tires from being used on the road. And that would allow you to still implement the Real ID program as long as you found another purpose for what you're doing. And when you limit it to
to say something else or solely for a good bureaucrat could find two reasons to do something, one being real ID and one being anything else. So when with the words expenses funds solely for the purpose of implementing, this, to me, this bill carries absolutely no weight anymore.
I'm happy to follow up and then respond to that. I had those same concerns, Representative Johnson, through the chair, and I've spoken with several attorneys who are helping out nationwide in the Real ID bills. They support this language. They don't read it that way, because I had that the very same concern that you had. They don't see it that way, and they feel comfortable with the language, and I feel comfortable with the language. I'd rather have it have been the language that we had, but I think this is a fair compromise.
Reverend Cargill.
Just in answer to that, I was a little concerned about that. Only my fears were probably somewhat relieved when we passed a resolution that set a policy statement. There was two policy calls in there that we didn't want to implement the requirements of Real ID, and that we wanted to stand for the sovereignty of the 10th Amendment. And so that policy call together with this, I think, does give direction to our DMV to kind of fight that off. But one of my concerns was that if there were pieces that are in the Real ID that we ended up implementing under our there's an association, the DMV Association, which, by the way, we need to watch them too. But I think it allows them to take the best practices, and some of them are going to come right out of the Real ID Act, but many of them will not. There's some barriers there. One of them is the top-down mandate. The other one is the kind of that division between the federal and the states. The Fed's going to have an ID that trumps all states' ID. I just don't think we should go down that road. But for the states then to maybe do some checking on theirs, I think for identification purposes is totally appropriate. On the other hand, we don't want to turn our license into a federal passport either. So I mean, those are kind of the balances, and so I think we should be able to take some of those pieces that are appropriate, implement them, and that was my concern, that we'd say absolutely no way to all of it, and I had a concern about that.
Reverend Johnson.
Thank you, and I appreciate that, and I'm still not comforted. I still think if I'm a good bureaucrat, I could implement anything in Real ID I wanted to just by saying it's also for something else.
Is not the term good bureaucrat an oxymoron?
Well, not. I will go on record as saying the chairman said that. But I think that you could implement any provision of Real ID and tag on to it, and also a fishing license, or also a studded tires, or also a anything. And when you say solely for, you have basically said that anything that they want to implement in Real ID, they can implement as long as they find another purpose for it. And so I, as comforted as the sponsor is and the rules chairman is, I don't find a lot of comfort in anything I've heard so far.
Well, and I have... As everybody knows, I have real concerns, with the Real ID Act from the other side of the coin. And some may be valid, some may not be. But this was kind of a compromise we arrived at, to move it on out of the committee. Yes, sir.
And again, I had the exact same concerns, Representative Johnson, through the chair. And I'll just explain kind of the thought process that we went through in accepting that and in speaking with attorneys who deal in this and are a lot smarter than I am. The thought process is, a state agency may not expend solely for the purpose of implementing or aiding the requirements of the Federal Real ID Act. So the policy is clearly there. We've passed a resolution. We don't want to spend money as a state on Real ID. Now, if the federal government decides to give us money for Real ID, which people, that's been a concern, quite frankly, from people at the other extreme who say, well, what if the federal government gives us $10 million and says implement Real ID? Well, the way the grants are written from the federal government would give us a grant and say, this grant is for the purpose of implementing Real ID. It's for XYZ. And so we, under this bill, and again, this is speaking with people back in D.C. who specialize in this, they say we would not be able to expend those funds to do that. So there's a block. Then you've got the state with a state statute and with a resolution saying no money for Real ID. So that's a second block. And then you've got we have the appropriation powers. So I think a finance committee that went ahead and implemented money to go ahead and enact the Real ID law, they'd probably have a lot of angry phone calls from people out there. And I didn't try to get people to call in today, but I can tell you in the committees that I've sat on in the past on this issue, there people are very concerned about this. So I think this does provide adequate protection, and I'm satisfied with it.
Sure. Yes, and then I want to go to public testimony after Governor Johansson. Okay. And you too? Okay. You and then public testimony.
I'm not sure if this is the place for it, but I'm still trying to get my head around the comments that the Rules Chairman made. If there are certain sections of Real ID that may be worthy and the state may move towards implementing, are they not, as on line 7, are they not requirements of the Federal Real ID Act, whether it's a section or if it's the whole thing? And if this precludes us from spending any money on anything that's in Real ID, are we tying our hands to those good things that we may want to spend money on? I don't know the answer. I'm just a little confused. And either one of you, if you can help me wade through that question in my mind.
Which?
I don't care. Anybody who wants or not, I don't.
Mr. Chairman, I could help respond on that. There's two ways to look at it. One is if we are tightening up security measures or things from Alaska law that are congruent to this Real ID Act, then if we had a strict prohibition, there could be made a case that we are implementing sections of that. Whereas what we're trying to say is we do not want them to require them of us for their purposes. That's really, I think, the two different approaches that I keep looking at this. I don't mind it if the state begins to hammer those out here in this policy body, but I am not a big fan of the feds coming down and saying you must accept this policy or we are going to kind of make dual citizens in Alaska. I think that is terribly wrong. So one of them is we might actually have some of the same procedures, but one is a top-down mandate from the feds. One is something we debate in this hall. And I know I'd rather debate them in this hall than to have the federal government say you must do it, whether or not we give you money. If they give us $5 and say you must do it, once you take the $5, you've got the hook on. So I think that's kind of the difference. One is, what are some of the best practices, as the sponsor said, that we could actually implement that help us secure some of our identification issues? I think that's totally appropriate. But for the feds to say, you must do identity verification our way and only our way based on our requirements, then I think that is a problem, for what it's worth.
Thank you.
Okay, Reverend
I have a different point. So if someone wants to I have a different point, so if someone wants to respond to that. Okay. I noticed under the legislation in other states, states that have opted out of the Real ID by statute, and others that have passed bills opposing. Would this be opting out, or is this, what would this be considered?
We have gotten an extension. All 50 states have gotten an extension,
right.
Even the ones that have opposed Real ID. Everyone's gotten the extension, but we would be saying that we're not participating in the Real ID program, as have.
So that would be opting out at that point. That would be that.
I would be opting out.
Yeah, thank you. We have a couple people online here, I believe. We have a Patrick Dalton and a Zephora Dalton, both in Delta Junction. Are they both online, and which one would like to go first?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Patrick Dalton here. Would you like me to go first?
It's up to you, sir.
And thank you, sir.
Welcome.
I appreciate the comments I'm hearing, and I'm glad that the light's shining on this Real ID Act finally. Since 2005, I've been watching it very carefully, and I've noticed that there's basically about three ways of looking at this, and And there's three ways that this bill is really poor. There's, of course, from the individual point of view, it trashes about three or four of our individual rights. The Alaska right to privacy, Article 1, Section 22, also the Fourth Amendment, the U.S. Constitution, to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures, and that without a warrant and probable cause. And, of course, there's the First Amendment, the right to practice your religion freely. And I could go into that if anyone had any questions on how that is infringed on in this. As a born-again Christian, Bible-believing, literal Bible-believing individual, I could explain that. The second way that the Real ID Act is very poor is the states' rights issue, which you're all tend to be focused on right now. But there's also a third issue that comes up in this Real ID Act that is often overlooked, and I think that's the national sovereignty issue. And I realize that all of you members of the House State Affairs are probably very patriotic individuals, and you're in Juneau, and you're not paid enough either for doing what you're doing, and you really make sacrifices, and you're patriotic for our state and our country. But if you take a look at this Real ID from a national sovereignty standpoint, this is really stripping our national sovereignty, I believe. And if more people realize that, I think there'd even be more people against the Real ID. And that's why I support Senate Bill 202. I think that this thing started with the International Civil Aviation Organization, which is a United Nations organization. It recommended to our president that he implement passport things like 64 gigabyte chips in passports, and that was CNET 102605 by Declan McCullough. So really, this whole idea of the Real ID Act began probably with the United Nations, and all the 27 European nations have agreed to implement similar identification measures as ours, as well as Great Britain, of course. And so really this is a United Nations, a global umbrella that we're submitting ourselves to if we go along with this. And a lot of people just don't realize that that's really what we're getting into, and in addition to our individual rights and our states' rights. And I would urge you to really consider that what we're doing is we're falling into the first part of a global government if we accept the Real ID. And I would urge you to reject it for that on those grounds as well. And thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Well put. Zafar Dalton, are you there?
Yeah.
Are you related to Mr. Patrick Dalton?
Yes. I think this Real ID is a violation of our rights. It's a violation of the Fourth Amendment because it's a search without a probable cause. It's a violation of the First Amendment, freedom of religion. It violates the right to privacy, Article 1, Section 22 of the state constitution, and it violates our 10th Amendment state rights, and it steals the sovereignty of the U.S., putting us under a global umbrella. It's not a national ID, it's a global ID. Thanks.
Yes. Did you have any other comments, ma'am?
I have nothing.
I think Representative Grunberg wanted.
I apologize for being late, and I'd like to put on the record why I was late.
First of all, I'd like to recognize Representative Grunberg has, in fact, joined us. Go ahead.
It's not an out-of-body experience. I appreciate this bill. I was just up in the Administrative Regulation Review Committee where they're dealing with the same issue, basically. It deals with the legality of a regulation that the DMV has put out on whether they can, without statutory authority, require social security numbers, and it deals with this whole issue, and this bill was cited in that discussion. And there's litigation going on, and Mark Choate, one of the attorneys, is here in the front row, and it's in the courts now, and it's before that committee as well, and this is a part and parcel of the same thing. And I would just like to ask the senator one question, if I may. The bill, Senate Bill 202, that's the one we're on, right?
I hope so.
Okay. It says a state agency may not expend funds. Now, they were quoting that you meant federal funds. Do you mean state funds, federal funds, or both federal and state? And if so, should we specify, because they said federal funds. I was thinking you meant state funds, and I think that might be something you'd want to clarify, and you might want to say either state or federal funds. So there's no question.
Thank you,
the chair.
Representative Groenberg, to the chair. It means both. That's my intent. And we've had conversations with the drafter of the bill, Attorney Luckup, and my understanding is that expending funds means any funds. And so if federal funds are given to the state, then they cannot be expended under this, and state funds can't be expended under this either.
May I follow up?
So apparently, wherever the funds come from.
Right? I understand, and I normally wouldn't have had that question, but when they said federal funds, I would like to potentially offer an amendment so that's not any question at all. So it would be either state or federal funds. Would you have a problem with that?
I think it's clear the way it is. If the committee wishes to do otherwise, then.
I just didn't want, through the chair, I just don't want them or anybody to erroneously think this only means federal funds, because I don't think that was the intent.
I was hoping we get through this bill without any amendments, but what's your pleasure?
Well, I think we have a CS anyway.
And that's already been adopted.
Okay. I would move that we add on line 6, state or federal, after expend and before funds.
Is there any objection from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, are we in public testimony, or are we in committee?
We're in public testimony. That is correct. That is correct.
I apologize. I'll offer that appropriate.
Let's wait until we get past public testimony.
Thank you.
I think it's in the public testimony. I do have some expert witnesses from our own group here. So I'm going to close public testimony. And I would like to ask on anything. I have with us Kevin Brooks is with us, Brittany Brewster from the DMV is with us, also Chris Stearns, an Assistant Attorney General is here. Oh, and Kevin, you wanted to testify? Yes, sir. And you've heard the ongoing conversation here. I would like to keep this bill as simple as possible so we can move it out, because, I've had some difficulty with the whole concept here, but I'm willing to work with the group to try to pass it out, as long as we don't overcomplicate it. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Kevin Brooks. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Administration. And before I start on my testimony, I'd like to address the point that was just raised on the use of funds. I heard the same testimony, and I apologize to the committee for being late this morning, because I was at the same reg review meeting.
Well, the one who made the comments was also late, and he's gone now.
As was Director Brewster and our Assistant Attorney General. I heard the chair refer to federal funds in that meeting as well. It's not something that we have said ever. We understand that it's all funds. And
any funds from any source.
There's not been a confusion on our part on what funds were being referred to there. So just to clarify that point.
Representative Groenberg.
Well, if that, and I talked with the sponsor, I won't offer an amendment. I just was shocked when I heard that, and I didn't want there to be any questions. So thank you.
Excellent.
Mr. Chairman, I just some general comments, and again, we do have the director from the DMV on the line. We appreciate the committee's work on this bill and adopting a CS, and really our concerns all along have been what I've heard Representative Coggio and others address, is that there's certain things that the DMV does that just make good business sense. And overall, what we're trying to accomplish is that we issue a license to somebody, and they are who they say they are. And ultimately, that's what our goal was in doing. There's many things that we do that you could find in the regulations that have been promulgated on Real ID Act. Fraud training or digital photos instead of a Polaroid photo. Many things that make good sense for us to protect against fraud. Illegal presence in the state is another issue that, Mr. Chairman, that you have in your bill HB3 that we think is a good idea also. Those all get at making sure the person says they are who they say they are. And ultimately, I think with the language here that has been inserted, that it's just, if it's solely to implement Real ID in Alaska, we're not interested in doing that. We don't want the federal government, in effect, cramming something down our throat. But if we think it's a good idea, and the debate that occurs in this building and supports that, and we come to that conclusion, we don't want to be precluded from doing something that we think is a good idea. So I think the CS gets to that, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
And so you'd want to have good practices, whether it's what we do here or Real ID or whatever, as long as the state agrees.
That's right.
Yeah. Any questions? Representative Dahl?
Just a quick question. when you're adopting some of those good practices, are you also meeting the requirements that would, if the state were to change later and choose to implement the Real ID, that these practices that you're doing individually, would they also be meeting then what the federal government has required?
Through the chair, Representative Dahl, if I understand your question correctly, there's no single thing that will make you compliant with the Real ID. It's a long list.
Right, I understand that.
So we might, for instance, currently we might be compliant on 5 or 6. I really don't know the number. That wouldn't necessarily change whether, you know, going into the future, whether there's future federal action or others.
I'm just wondering whether, you know, you're doing it by bits and pieces. I mean, we're taking things that are good, mm-hmm. and but I'm wondering if later something should change and we want to go ahead and implement, whether those things you've chosen to do would meet those requirements, or you've changed it just to, you know, I don't know if I'm making myself clear, but if you modified it enough that it wouldn't meet the requirements at a different date. Or are you just taking it wholesale and it would meet it as well if we chose to do it later?
Through the chair, Representative Dahl, I believe it's going to be a point-by-point compliance, and then there will be things. Because, again, I think if you laid them all out, there's probably many things that all of us here could probably say, yeah, that seems like a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to data sharing or other things like that, those are points that we probably are always going to have some heartburn about. So,
thank you.
Thank you very much. We have Whitney Brewster. Did you have any comments you'd like to make? Whitney, are you?
For the record, my name is Whitney Brewster, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. I am simply here to answer any questions. I ditto the comments made by Deputy Commissioner Brooks, and again, I'd just be happy to answer any questions that the committee has.
Very fine. And we have Krista Stearns, Assistant Attorney General. Are you online?
Yes, through the chair, Krista Stearns, Assistant Attorney General, and like Ms. Brewster, I'm here to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Fine. Thank you very much. Is anybody else in the audience need to speak to this? If not, I've already closed public testimony.
Don't.
Committee discussion, and I...
Mr. Chairman, if I have a question, if I could.
Yes, please.
And I don't know all the regulations of the Real ID and all the steps you have to take, but is there anything in the Real ID Act that couldn't be considered dual-purposed? Like if you have to have a photo ID, we could also use that for criminal investigation. If you have to have a birth certificate to get a driver's license, we could use that to prove you were a citizen. Is there anything in the Real ID Act that couldn't be dual-purposed, that you couldn't say, well, it's not only for Real ID, it's also for school registration, whatever. Is there anything in there that stands alone and only ever, nothing else, no other use than for the Real ID?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I'm trying to think. Ms. Brewster may be better able to answer. There may be certain very specific things, but in that, well, I guess I'll defer to Ms. Brewster.
Brewster, did you hear the question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, there are some items that could be seen as Real ID. I would say that the point of requiring certain verification with other states electronically would be solely for Real ID. I can't think of at this time any other purpose for that would serve, another purpose.
Mr. Chairman, if I might ask Ms. Brewster a question. Couldn't you want to verify that someone didn't live in another state for an elections purpose?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I don't know that the Division of Elections verifies that information through the DMV.
But, Mr. Chairman, if I might, but you could.
Representative Johnson, yes, I believe that you could.
So then it wouldn't be solely for the purpose of Real ID. Thank you. I just, Mr. Chairman, I can't see a single reason in the Real ID Act that is solely for Real ID and therefore can be used for another purpose. And I think this bill basically does nothing to prevent the Real ID Act from being implemented.
I don't know if that's the intention of the sponsor of the bill. Otherwise, he wouldn't be sponsoring the bill. Any further discussion, Representative Roses?
Nope.
Would you? I entertain a motion.
Is there any other?
Did you have a question? Are you preparing to move this, Mr.
Yes,
Chairman?
Yes, I am.
Under committee, just one more time.
That's okay.
I appreciate the sponsor bringing this forward. I think version A did it. I think we could have fixed it in a better way than say solely. I think you can find a dual use for anything. There is nothing in this bill that will keep the state from implementing every single item of the Real ID Act and just couch it as being something else. So if we're going to pass this out with the illusion.
Are you going to object if you like?
Oh, well, I will, Mr. Chairman, but are you going to not let me get this on the record?
Oh, of course.
Okay, thank you. There's nothing in this bill that will prevent the Real ID Act from being implemented. If we're passing this out with the illusion that it is, I just want to be on the record of saying that I just would challenge anyone to come up with one reason that I couldn't come up with another reason to fund this. So this will not prevent the Real ID Act. The intentions of this bill are great. I don't support the federal ID. I do intend to vote this down, not because I don't support it, but because this will not do what this committee, I don't believe it'll do what the sponsor intends, and I don't believe it'll do what the citizens of Alaska expect us to do.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the House CS for Senate Bill 202, Version M, with individual recommendations, and appears to be a zero fiscal note.
Governor Johnson, any objection?
No, sir.
You may object if you like.
I understand that, but I don't think it will do any good, and I am on the record as stating my opinion.
Okay. There's no other objection then. HB 202 passed from the committee with individual recommendations. Let's take a short hiatus here while we sign the paperwork. And General Chesky is here. I've not seen you for a while. But, okay, would you please introduce, looks like HB 201.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, my name is Bill Wilcox. I'm State Senator from Northeast Anchorage. And after that performance, I think I'm going to have my staff Michelle present on this one.
Hi, my name is Michelle Seidman, and I serve as staff to Senator Bill Wilkowski, who represents Northeast Anchorage, as he just said. The intent of SB 201, the Alaska Open Government Act, is to mandate creation of a free searchable website that provides Alaskans with easy access to detailed information on state spending. Such a website will foster better information of state operations and ultimately ensure that funding is directed to the state's most important needs. Creation of similar websites is occurring across the country. In 2006, President Bush signed the Federal Funding Accountability and Transparency Act. This act calls for the creation of a searchable website for federal contracts and grants of more than $25,000. The website recently went online at www.federalspending.gov. Interestingly, this legislation was introduced years ago by a bipartisan team of four U.S. senators, including Senators John McCain and Barack Obama. Last year, five states, Kansas, Texas, Oklahoma, Minnesota, and Hawaii, passed legislation mandating the creation of online databases with comprehensive information on their state's expenditures. Efforts are currently underway in 17 other states to pass so-called taxpayer transparency acts, including New Mexico, Colorado, Washington, and North Dakota. A national consensus is emerging, supported by advocates from both ends of the political spectrum, from Ralph Nader to Grover Norquist, who may be online to join us today, that taxpayers should be able to easily track and help direct government spending. Real accountability and good decision-making require an informed public, a public with access to information on government spending at their fingertips. While Senator Wilikowski first learned about the benefits of taxpayer transparency acts at a National Conference of State Legislatures meeting last August, this is an issue that Governor Palin has also embraced. The senator applauds her for the commitment made by her administration to begin implementation of such a system. This bill would put the requirement for a free, publicly searchable database in statute so that all future governors will show the same commitment to transparency and accountability. This is good public policy worthy of being enshrined in statute. SB 201 also provides guidance as to the type of information that a public finance website should contain. While the administration's current website can best be described as an online checkbook, this bill calls for inclusion of information that will provide a context for daily expenditures. For example, it calls for a listing of total state expenditures over the past 10 years and a comparison of revenues received versus funds expended. It also requires an accounting, which can be in the form of a simple bar chart, of the total number of state employees over each of the past 10 years. This information is currently available in other state publications, but it will be compiled online and presented in a clear manner for all Alaskans to understand. The fiscal note for accomplishing this is zero, as it can be accomplished by existing webmasters and finance staff. In closing, we ask for your support of SB 201 and the right of all Alaskans to easily accessible and detailed information on how their dollars are being spent.
Did I actually hear you say that Senator Obama and Senator McCain both agree to this?
Yes, they are both co-prime sponsors, as I understand it, or were co-prime sponsors.
Okay, any questions for sponsors? Representative Dahl.
Yeah, I'm curious whether if there's an expenditure for moving a state out from one location to another, whether that would be in there.
Representative Dahl, through the chair, if the government is spending more than $1,000 on anything, it would be in there. As I understand it, there are a couple exclusions which Kim Garnero, who is the chief of financial officer for the state, can identify. But as it is now, the most state expenditures over $1,000 would be listed.
Interesting.
Representative Johansson.
I just want to put out there that I would be extremely surprised if the Department of Administration can do anything without requesting money for it. And if it's not in this fiscal note, I can almost guarantee you that when we get the operating budget next year, there'll be something in there to implement this. So I, for one, will pay extreme attention. I know the sponsor is testifying that there won't be any more expenditures, but I'd certainly like to hear from the Department of Administration how they're going to accomplish this without spending one dime. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions for the sponsor?
I do.
Representative Grunberg?
Through the chair, Ms. Seidman or Senator Wilikowski, you have expenditures over $1,000.
What page are you?
That's defined on page 4.
Okay.
Line 10. But it doesn't seem to limit the income sources over $1,000, because you could have receipts and earnings. I don't know if receipts, you could have a receipt from a fishing fee or, you know, a driver's license, $20 or something. Is it your intent to require just category receipts and income, or are you going to do every little $20? Do you want to have $1,000 on that too? Otherwise, you're going to just be inundated with stuff. Through the chair.
Representative Grunberg, through the chair. My understanding is that this online checkbook component would be updated on a monthly basis, so all of those little funds received would be aggregated on a monthly basis into certain categories. But I do think that Ms. Garnero, who's in the audience and who spent quite a bit of time thinking about this, might be able to even give you a better answer.
She is a real expert, and she's testified before this committee before, and I, for one, am very glad to see her, and I'll ask her, and she's smiling if she could answer that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I had one more.
Representative Johansson.
Page 1, line 7, the short title. Don't we already have an AOGA?
What, repeat that, please.
I said, don't we already have an AOGA?
Alaska Oil and Gas Association.
I don't want anybody to confuse the two. That was an attempt at humor.
Oh, my. I see that.
Well, it's tough when you have to explain when you're trying to be funny.
Destroys the humor, doesn't it?
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. That's good, though. I like that.
Appreciate that.
We'll put AOGA 2.
Okay. Any other questions for the sponsor? And now do we have Chris Nelson? Are you there?
Yes. Chris Nelson for Alaskans for Tax Reform.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Alaskans for Tax Reform strongly supports this, as does Americans for Tax Reform in Washington, D.C. This is a measure that's being considered, has been pointed out, in other states. Having done research on state finances before, there is an awful lot of public information available, in fact, virtually everything in Alaska, but it's hard to find. It's sort of paraphrasing the X-Files. The truth is out there, but in our case, the truth is out there, but I bet you can't find it. Putting together a single web portal that will be searchable will basically streamline the research process. People will become more involved in their state government, and for that reason, we urge your adoption of this measure.
Any questions, Mr. Nelson? Representative Grunberg.
Yeah, Mr. Nelson, I very much appreciate your testimony because they have, as the members will recall, the report card for the states. And I think that was in State Governments or Governing Magazine. Everybody's nodding.
I'm not agreeing, we're just going to sleep.
No, I don't think they're going to sleep, hopefully.
Governing Magazine.
I have read the highs and lows in that. I don't read all the states. But I know that Utah, particularly, and Virginia get A minuses. And particularly Utah, those are the only two states, has high marks in the making information available to the public category, whatever that's called. And they have stuff like this. And if we can implement this, I think this will raise our marks in the state report card annually, which I think is a very credible deal. Do you wish to comment, sir?
Well, I think that it is, through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I think you're absolutely correct. Certainly, it will get high marks from people that evaluate the efficiency of state government and its commitment to making information available. It will probably get even higher marks from Alaskans who have honest questions but really don't know where to go to find the answers. And this provides a web portal that will get them into more information and will help ensure a more informed and therefore more active electorate and more active population.
Any questions? Any more questions?
I have one more question for
Ms.
Seideman, if I could. Could I?
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Seideman, I'd like to look at the last section of the bill, Section 5, line 27. The list shall be updated monthly or annually as specified. Do you mean as specified in the Act here?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair. Yes, we do mean that. There are certain provisions, there are certain types of information that will be provided annually, the bigger picture kind of snapshots mm-hmm. to help provide a context. That information would be updated annually, and then the ongoing checkbook would be updated on a monthly basis.
I just technically wanted to put in the record when you say, quote, as specified, you mean in the Act rather than by some agency.
In the Act.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to be on the record on page 3, line 8.
Page 3, line 8.
Where it says expenditures for the preceding month, including the name and location of any person to whom a payment was made. Would that include things like welfare checks and child enforcement checks and things like that that would possibly render someone capable of tracking someone to do them harm?
Right.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, those payments are excluded on page 4.
I don't need to.
Of the bill.
I'm sorry, section 4?
Page 4, actually section 3, where we define expenditure to not include individual payments, payments of state or federal assistance to an individual, line 14.
Could I inquire on that follow-up?
Absolutely.
I appreciate that. I'm just wondering, technically, might there be any other payment to an individual which would not be, quote, state or federal assistance? I mean, like a permanent fund or something. I think that Representative Johnson's hit on a really important point here, to protect people who, you know, want to be protected from stalkers and folks like that.
Representative Johnson?
I'm wondering if the sponsor would look at page 4, lines 3 through 7. Would that protect the confidentiality of information?
Representative Johansson, through the chair, it does. I believe the permanent fund information is already by statute confidential.
Okay. Mr.
Go ahead.
If I'm a contractor with the state, a private contractor, could I not say that I do not want my payments released because I have confidentiality problems?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, my understanding, I mean, the Department of Law is reviewing probably 20 different categories of information right now to determine which types would be considered confidential and which would not. But I think you'd have to have solid legal ground to argue that your information should be kept confidential.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I find the Constitution as being terribly solid legal grounds. And the Constitution says I have a right to confidentiality. And I know of no other higher review.
But this does not really identify anybody by name, does it?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
name
and
it
address.
Does.
Absolutely.
Okay. This, well, just to the chair. This, if you have a state contract, if you're a contractor and you take out a bid on something, yeah, that's going to be on.
Okay,
on
so the Joe Jones did this and he got paid.
That's right. That's right. And that's absolutely what we're trying to get at. You lose your right to privacy the moment you enter in a contract with the state. Now, if the state has some sort of confidentiality agreement, if there's something to protect the security of the state or something, that may not be published. But this is exactly what we're getting at. The citizens of the state have a right to find out what the state is spending money on. That's exactly what we're getting at.
That's no different than a campaign contribution. You list who gives it to you, it's public knowledge.
Brother. Trying to do away with that too.
Huh? You can do away with that too.
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to follow up that I don't think that the
go
legal
ahead.
Opinion would trump the Constitution. I don't know that this was saying. I support the concept, but I think if I'm a contractor and you're issuing me a personal check, that I would have some grounds for privacy. I may be totally wrong, and unless I sign away that, and I'm pretty sure that you can't contract away your constitutional rights.
There is, through the chair, you have a right to privacy through the Constitution. That is correct. Alaska specifically says that in its Constitution. The citizens of the state also have the right to find out what their state is spending money on. And if the state is spending money on contracts, public contracts, then the citizens of the state have the right to know that. They have the right to know that now. You can file a Freedom of Information request and get that information. We're not changing anything. All we're saying is, the information is public. All we're saying is we're going to put it in one concise database.
Because really the state has no money at all. It's our money that they're the guardian for. They're the steward of it. It's our money. Yes.
Just to respond to the chair, to Representative Johnson, you can contract away your state rights, Miranda warnings. I mean, your constitutional rights.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you have a right to an attorney.
Well, yeah, well, I agree.
Mr. Chairman.
Johansson.
I just want to make sure I understand perfectly clear that all of the information is already collected and accessible to the public, and this bill is an access to the information bill. This does not expand any other information that is currently required or obtained by the state. Is that correct?
That's correct, Representative Johnson, to the chair. This is all information that you can either get online or by looking in our budgets that we pass or by going on the internet and searching around or by filing a Freedom of Information Act request. All we're doing is putting that information in one request. We're not making any additional information public, and we specifically say that information that's confidential is private.
So there's nothing information there. It's not confidential now. We just put it where we can get to it.
Well, and I think the real, you know, kind of the perfect example is our operating and capital budgets that we do. A lot of people, well, probably even a lot of people in this building don't. It's hard to find things in the budget, and we're saying we're going to create a searchable database so that you can find those things.
Okay. Any other questions? Anybody online for this bill? Any further questions for Chris Nelson? Thank you, Chris, for coming in.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I'm going to close public testimony.
No, Ms. Carnero was going to say.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Please come up. As you said, answer questions, what I said here.
Yeah. I had a question that you
asked. See, but I didn't know that. I know it now. Good morning.
Thank you. My name is Kim Garnero. I work as the Director of Finance in the Department of Administration. I believe Representative Gruenberg's question.
Be a little louder, please.
I'm sorry. Representative Gruenberg's question was, how will revenues be presented on the website? And expenditures do show who we paid. Revenues will not show who we got the money from. They will show the flavor of money by the account code, if it's a certain kind of federal revenue or what kind of oil and gas tax it is. It will not reflect the payer.
You have a copy of that.
Our accounting system does not do as elaborate a job of tracking who paid as our who paid versus who we pay.
And it'll be large aggregates.
Absolutely aggregate.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Johansson.
Two questions. First of all, other states have been referenced as having this program. What sort of cost do you have an idea of how much it costs other states to have this program running?
Representative Johansson, through the chair, I have spoken to other states. I know there was, I think it was Missouri, that has spent over $100,000 doing a database thing. Ours is the simpler version. We're using Excel to put our expenditure detail out there, which is why, I mean, it's a tool we have available to us, and it's pretty much ubiquitous. I have had no complaints from any of the people I've talked to on what we posted on the website so far that they've not been able to access the information. Your other question about the other thing that we're doing is many of the things that are required in this legislation that would add on to our version one, which is the checkbook detail, are information we already publish in our annual financial report, our CAFR, and publishing those in, this is already on the web as a document as a whole, publishing those in this public finance portal is at no additional cost. I will say what's making us able to publish the expenditure detail is our data warehouse, the Alaska Data Enterprise Reporting System we've been working on since July of 2006, which is our foundation for replacing our accounting, our 23-year-old accounting system. We would not have been able to produce those Excel spreadsheets for publication without ALDER, the Alaska Data Enterprise Reporting System.
And one more question. My other question is about redundancy.
Okay.
Within the State Departments.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Redundancy of reporting. It's just kind of a personal pet peeve of mine. It seems like I get reports like your CAFR and other thing in big envelopes all the time, and it's available on the internet. Is there any potential, if we're going to have all of this information on a single website, that some of the other reporting requirements that you have for your annual reports, I think of fish tickets. You know, in the summertime, we've got hundreds of fishermen putting fish tickets in the Fish and Game, and I know most of them are probably over $1,000. Do they have a system of tracking this stuff? Are we going to end up doing 2-3 separate reports of the same information. So we'll have Fish and Game doing an entire report on fish tickets. We'll be able to go to Fish and Game and get that information. We'll get it in the mail on paper. And at the same time, we have this central information area. So we've got information in three different places with seven different data entry people doing it all on different tracks. I mean, is this going to make anything more efficient? Can we get rid of some of the standard information reporting things that we already do?
Representative Johansson, through the chair, the information that we are publishing on the website is coming from our statewide accounting system. If fish tickets generate a revenue, which I don't know if they do or not, then that those revenues would be reflected in our statewide accounting system. We would publish from there. It would have nothing to do with Fish and Game. So as far as our comprehensive annual financial report, we do absolutely deliver to every legislator's office a copy of that every January. I don't know. I just heard another state actually say that they went through the garbage cans in their Capitol building and found several of their CAFRs in there, and I don't know if that's happening here. Is it something that you don't get value out of the hard copy? I think I've heard
everyone. For the record, I think it's great. Yeah. And I know committees, this is Max Grimberg for the record. I know other committees use it. I hope I don't mind you.
Yes, please.
I think it's great, and I want you to continue to do it.
Right. We have to print a few hard copies to give them to the Government Finance Officers Association for the certification for it. And we don't print many. We print under 400 of them.
Mr. Chairman, I guess, yes. I don't want to get specific about mm-hmm. fish tickets or CAFRs.
Okay.
My general question is, can this clearinghouse, information clearinghouse on the internet, supplant other forms of getting information to the public? Are we already doing it in some way, and will this supplant other efforts, which would free up other employees of the state to take on other projects? And rather than add people to do this, are we going to be able to free people up to do more?
Representative Johansson, through the chair, we won't be adding people to do it, and I doubt it will be freeing anybody up. It's a publication of existing information on a public finance website.
Okay. Any other questions? Anybody else online or in the audience to talk to this? If not, I'll close testimony and have committee discussion. Anybody ready to move this bill? I want to keep a quorum here if we can. Yes.
I'll move the bill within the fiscal year.
Okay. You want to move the bill officially?
Yes, I did.
You just did. Okay.
Yeah, I moved CSSB 201 finance with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Thank you very much. I think this is a very good bill. Any objection? If not, the bill moves from committee. Please get the paperwork. Just a couple of quick announcements here. Reverend Johanna, could you give us an abbreviated summary? Remember, you had the – thank you. We had the abbreviated – not abbreviated, but we had one report on the conflict of interest issues. Bill McAllister, Channel 2, had a post on that. There was a blog item on it. Could you give us maybe a final rundown on what we decided, at least for now?
Well, I can say for the record, I could really care less whether there's a blog out there talking about what we're doing. Secondly, we reviewed the measures that were sent to the committee, and as the chair of the subcommittee, I could find absolutely no common ground between any of the three or any solutions and the subcommittees.
Do you think we should do something with this during the interim? Not necessarily a subcommittee, but committee or individuals in on the
Mr.
committee.
Chairman, if you want to do something with it, feel free. I'm not going to spend one more second on it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
How do you really feel about this? Grunberg.
If it's the chair's wish to pursue this matter, we have done some work on it in my office, and I am at your disposal.
You're fine.
It's your choice.
Another, and I'll take it under consideration.
Mr. Chairman, just as an aside, I will continue to retain control of those in the subcommittee of those.
Okay, that's fine. We had the Darfur issue, which is, I think, what's happening in Darfur, I think, is of concern to all of us. We're unable to resolve that during the time we had available. I did send a letter to Mr. Mike Burns, the Permanent Fund Corporation. You should have all had a copy of this, as you can read.
Yes.
And we'll be looking at this during the interim, and I asked basically for him to suggest to us what he might do to help resolve this critical situation. I just wanted to bring that to your attention. He hadn't had time to respond to me yet, and he's not yet responded. Representative Grinberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know there's an equivalent Senate bill, and I'm just wondering, Nancy, do you know where that Senate bill is?
On what subject?
Defer. No, I'd have to look.
It
may come over, I don't know. But if you wish to entertain a motion to move the bill, I'm available to make that motion anytime you wish.
Fine. I'm not ready to do that now.
Okay.
But I'll keep that under consideration. Okay. And with that said, in this committee, this may not be the last meeting of the House State Affairs Committee, depending on what comes over. I made a great effort to hear most of the bills that have come to us for which somebody asked to have a hearing without regard to party, regard even some I didn't care that much for, that I think bills need to move on if possible. So we may meet again, we may not. Either way, I'd like to thank the committee for their hard work, and I really do appreciate it. And with that, the House State Affairs Committee is adjourned.